The margin for error on the timing of what he was about to do would be razor thin. As he'd anticipated, Gilbert ducked and flipped away from the weapons buzzing and circling him. He was clearly about to teleport, merely picking his destination. Just before he made the jump, though, his dodging forced him to turn his back on Nick and Mary for half a second. Nick took off from his spot, dashing with all the speed his storky legs could afford him. Mid-run, it occurred to him that moments like this were probably why so much of the time in gym class was spent conditioning their capacity to run. Gilbert had already teleported out of range of the weapons, but Nick didn't see that. He didn't need to. Nick had been watching and analyzing Gilbert's movements with each jump out of danger. The good thing about using the same pattern when evading was that it made such movements second nature, allowing for faster reaction time. The bad thing was that, if your opponent was observant enough, they could use those same habits to predict your movements before you made them. Nick was exceptionally observant. There was a very small lag between Gilbert disappearing and reappearing, but there was one. And that, coupled with the half-second he was turned away, proved to be just enough for Nick's run. Gilbert appeared directly in front of Nick, his eyes widening in surprise at another person being in a spot he'd clearly anticipated as being empty. Before he could react any more than that, Nick reared back and punched him directly in the side of his head. Gilbert dropped like a politician's approval when raising taxes, smacking the ground and twitching slightly. Without looking, Nick held out his left hand and felt a small smack as his weapon landed in it. The press of a button and a flick of the wrist later found Gilbert with a bracelet that had become clear, save only for a small, green arrow.
"Think he'll be okay?" Mary asked.
"Nope. But that's why we've got healers," Nick replied, taking a deep breath and getting his bearings.
"You throw a hell of a punch," Mary complimented, as she ambled over to him.
"That's the problem with the overly combative types like you and him. You guys forget that just because I wield a metaphysical thing like luck, it doesn't mean I can't clean a clock on occasion," Nick said.
"I suppose there's some truth to that," Mary admitted. "You know, if I wasn't in your head, I would have never believed you pulled that off without using any luck."
"Then things are exactly as they should be," Nick said. "I suppose you still want to keep looking for our dorm mates."
"You could have said our friends," Mary pointed out.
"Yes, that was also a verbal option. Not the one I elected to use, though."
"Nick, Nick, Nick,"
Mary said, with a shake of her head.
"You still have so far to come."
"Emotional growth can wait for later. Right now, let's just get this test over with," Nick said.
"Do you hear something?"
Alex whispered, as he and Vince crept through the dark.
"Kind of,"
Vince whispered back. He wasn't quite sure what was reaching his ears. It wasn't the scrape of shoes against the concrete beneath them, or the hurried hustle of a fellow student moving to a new location. It was softer, and slightly harmonic. As he and Alex stepped into a new room, the sound bounced off a nearby wall and magnified significantly. Only then did the two finally realize what they were hearing.
"Someone is singing," Alex said,
his voice not as hushed as it should have been.
"Mm-hmm,"
Vince replied. He should have been more worried about Alex not hiding his voice, or more curious about what would cause someone to be giving away their position by singing. These were thoughts that might have been scrambling around in his mind, but if such thoughts existed, they were lost in a fog, growing thick within his brain. Without wondering why, Vince began moving toward the sound of the song. A part of him dimly registered Alex coming as well. It was noted, in a very abstract sort of fashion, and then promptly forgotten. The two students moved more swiftly through the dark halls, the song bouncing off the walls and guiding them clearly. At last, they came to a halt in a dark room like any other, save for the fact that in this one dwelled the singer who had brought them there. Vince raised his hand, and a small flame burned in the center, illuminating the room around them. It was a bare, concrete room with only one other person. Sitting cross-legged in the center of the floor was a girl Vince barely recognized from class. She had long, dark hair and olive skin. He remembered thinking she was pretty-looking at one point. Now, he was transfixed by her beauty, amazed he had ever found the strength to tear his eyes from her. He kneeled down in front of her, bringing out more fire so he could see her better. This time he didn't even notice that Alex was following suit. There was no room in his mind for anything else. The test, the program, the world all paled in comparison. There was only her. Her and the song. She never stopped singing, not as she reached into her pocket and produced an oddly familiar yellow device, not as she pressed it to Alex's temple and he collapsed to the ground, not even as she held it against Vince's eager skin. It was only when Vince came back around that the song had stopped, and by then his bracelet was clear, and it was far too late to matter. 64.
Stella?
Nope, Nick replied.
Will?
Totally, Nick said.
Alice?
No doubt, Nick told her.
Really?
Mary said uncertainly.
She's so pretty, and I've heard her thoughts wander in that direction several times before. You sure?
Daddy issues with an overprotective, emotionally distant father. Not saying she won't be busting wild in days to come, but as of now, I'm positive she's a virgin, Nick said.
I really have trouble believing you can deduce whether someone has had sex just by briefly meeting them,
Mary said. You can see in my head. Am I lying?
I said I have trouble believing, not that I didn't believe,
Mary pointed out. The two were trekking through the darkness of the halls, still in search of their fellow companions. Mary's mental eavesdropping had steered them away from more potential fights, but they'd been forced to take some twists and turns that took them farther from their goal. The tension had culminated in boredom, which had led to conversation and had ultimately found them having the current conversation. Adrenaline and fear are powerful silencers. However, even sneaking through a pitch-black labyrinth can grow tedious after enough time.
So what about Herschel?
Mary asked. Oh, come on. As much as he moons over you, there is no way his brain hasn't given that one away, Nick said.
I try not to listen. It didn't seem polite,
Mary explained.
Not polite? You dig through my head like a hobo scrounging for food outside a restaurant dumpster, but he's a no-fly zone?
Nick said, his voice rising octaves in mock outrage.
He doesn't have anything to hide, nor does he need the advanced levels of therapy you do. Besides, he's romantically interested in me. It seemed like a poor idea to listen to the thoughts of someone I might end up dating,
Mary said.
Harumph.
Nick harumphed. Yes, by the way. Still pure as the driven snow.
That's nice,
Mary said, grateful that Nick couldn't see her smile in the darkness. Advanced therapy, huh?
You've got some issues.
National Geographic has issues, Nick said. I have personality.
You have a complete inability to trust anyone, Mary pointed out. I mean, you don't even trust Vince, and that kid thinks of you as his best friend.
Friends stab you in the front, Nick mumbled.
Real cute. On that note, Vince?
Surprisingly, no. And before you ask, not with Sasha. She's not either, but the two of them haven't knocked boots. Not with each other, I mean, Nick said.
Wow. They've been dating for months now. Wonder what's holding them back,
Mary speculated. He's a gentleman, and she thinks he's a virgin and doesn't want him to think she's a slut, Nick answered.
I thought I was the telepath,
Mary said. Please, Nick scoffed. Nothing new in that story. Admittedly, usually the guy is only pretending to be a gentleman, but the context is the same.
Shut up,
Mary said quickly. Had Nick been a bit dumber or a touch more sensitive, he might have thought she was silencing him after his last comment. Instead, he merely shut his yapper. Moments later, he heard footsteps echoing toward them. The intruder came close, then turned away a few rooms later. The steps faded away quickly, but he stayed quiet until Mary signaled the all clear.
We're okay now, she told him finally. Also, that is a terribly jaded view of the courting process.
Funny how reality and jaded seem to mean the same thing at the end of the day, Nick shot back.
Whatever, Mr. Sad Sack. You know what I find to be reality? That you've been here as long as we have, experienced this new environment, and started acting like a real super just like we four. But you haven't grown or changed one bit. Herschel's popping out of his shell. Roy's calming down and getting focused. Alice is letting herself make connections to people, and Vince is getting used to having structure. Not Nick, though. You're the same guy today as you were when we first met,
Mary said. I grew up a long time ago, Nick said, a few strands of bitterness snaking into his voice. Besides, I noticed you weren't on that list either, Miss High and Mighty.
Of course I'm growing. I'm learning to play chess,
Mary corrected him. Oh, well then, my mistake, Nick said.
Apology accepted,
Mary said.
Alex?
Nope, Nick told her. But then, no surprise there. Super in a small town is bound to have some fans.
I suppose you have a point,
Mary admitted.
We're almost there, by the way.
About time, Nick complained, as they loped carefully through the darkness. Who is it?
Why? Hoping for someone in particular?
Yes, Roy. We need another heavy hitter. Too bad he's out of the game.
You're lying,
Mary informed him.
Why don't you want to admit that you'd prefer we find Vince? You and he hang out plenty. There's nothing wrong with wanting your friend to help during a stressful situation.
I don't have friends, just assets, Nick told her.
I ought to knock you on your asset,
Mary snapped.
Anyway, you'll see who it is in a minute or two.
Fine, Nick snapped. He needed to get his game face back on. Soon they'd have company, and that meant Nick the quip-filled chatterbox, not Nick the conniver. He couldn't hide things from Mary. However, that was no excuse to let himself get sloppy in front of others.
You're really pathetic sometimes,
Mary scolded. Nick blinked, then realized she was rebuking him for his thoughts rather than any recent words. I gotta be me, Nick told her. He hesitated for a minute as a question popped into his head. He was about to stifle it, then realized Mary had heard it already, so he might as well ask. Does Vince really think of me as his best friend?
And trusts you without hesitation,
Mary assured him.
Kind of sad, knowing the man you really are.
Yeah. Be careful you don't fall off that soapbox. the two stepped through a series of arches rapidly and stopped in a dark room like many of the others they'd been in over the last hour.
"Speaking of being elevated..."
"Ahoy up there!"
Mary called, her voice echoing off the ceiling.
"Mary?"
Alice's tentative voice drifted down.
"And Nick," Nick tossed in.
"Oh, great,"
Alice groaned from her vantage point on the ceiling.
"You had to be tagging along."
"You know me, Princess. One for all and all for one. We're passing this test as a team,"
Nick lied.
"Well, to be technical, we're the last of the team,"
Mary said.
"Vince and Alex went down about 15 minutes ago."
Nick whistled.
"Who took those two out?"
"Let's just say if you hear someone singing, run like hell,"
Mary told him.
"Guys, not that I'm not thankful to have company, but I'm guessing you two have some sort of plan?"
Alice asked.
"My plan was to round up as many of us as I could,"
Mary said.
"As of now, I'm officially open to suggestions."
"Might I recommend surrender?"
said a new voice in the room, one that didn't immediately register to its other inhabitants. Nick wasn't the only one with decent deductive skills, though. It only took Mary a moment to confirm her fears and the mystery voice's owner.
"Hi, Chad,"
she said weakly. 65.
"You sure it's him?"
Nick half-whispered.
"Seeing as he's the only student in our class whose thoughts I can't hear, yeah, I'm pretty sure,"
Mary confirmed.
"Ahem. It's dark, I get that. I am still standing right here, though,"
Chad called out.
"Oh no, we've offended him. Now he'll easily beat us and knock us out of the test. A totally different outcome than what he was already planning,"
Nick said.
"Actually, I was planning to let you and Alice go," Chad corrected. "Neither of you pose a good fight for me."
"Really?"
Alice asked from overhead.
"Yes. Mary stays, though. I imagine she will make an interesting opponent,"
Chad informed them.
"Cool by me," Nick declared. "Alice, fly your ass down here and let's book."
"But what about Mary?"
Alice asked hesitantly.
"I appreciate the sentiment, Alice, but you should go. Chad is a strong super, so fighting him is likely to cause a lot of collateral damage. It will be easier if I don't have to worry about hitting either of you in this darkness,"
Mary told her.
"You're sure?" "Of course. I'll catch up with you two later. Now hurry up,"
Mary instructed her.
"You heard the girl. Time for us to exit stage right,"
Nick told her. Without any more coaxing, Alice floated down to Nick's side, and the two slowly made their way into another room. They stumbled along into another hallway and were lost once more in the endless twists of the labyrinth. Neither Chad nor Mary said anything until their footsteps had totally faded away.
"You lied to your friends," Chad said matter-of-factly.
"Yes, I did,"
Mary admitted.
"That was very kind of you," he complimented.
"It was kind of you to let them go,"
she returned. Mary heard something that sounded suspiciously like a shrug.
"I meant what I said. Their powers aren't suited for combat. I won't learn anything from them or be suitably challenged. I gain no satisfaction from defeating weaker opponents."
"You and me both,"
Mary said.
"Though I don't think that's applicable to either of us in this case."
"No, it is certainly not," Chad agreed.
With that, he rushed forward. "Holy crap!" Nick exclaimed, as they heard a tremendous smashing sound some yards behind them.
Ditto, Alice seconded. Do you think she's okay?
I'm sure she's fine, Nick lied hurriedly. We should be moving faster.
You think Chad will change his mind?
I think there is a metric fuck-ton of power being flexed uncomfortably close to my proximity, and I'd like to increase that meager bit of distance, Nick clarified, quickening his pace.
You make a compelling case,
Alice agreed, matching his speed.
This doesn't seem a little wrong to you, though? I mean, we're here learning to be heroes. Doesn't running away go counter to that?
Only if your definition of a hero is someone who gets needlessly pummeled, Nick replied. You and I have precise, useful talents. Kicking ass isn't in either of our repertoires, though.
Maybe if we teamed up, Alice began,
we could hamstring the only one of the three of us with an outside shot of winning, Nick finished. Moments like this are exactly why I'd guess they're splitting us into combat and alternative training, to illustrate when a strategic removal of forces is more beneficial than a grand last stand.
You sure jazzed up the concept of running away there,
Alice said. Why, thank you, Princess. I consider it my gift. Since when are you so concerned about Mary's well-being anyway?
She came looking for me. Both of you did. Something sits wrong with me, hightailing it away from her now that things are rough,
Alice justified. And here I just thought you were growing chummy with our diminutive mind reader, Nick said. Alice tried to brush off his comment. However, she discovered that it didn't brush quite so easily. She wasn't just worried about getting away, and she didn't feel guilty purely because she was leaving someone behind. These feelings were more persistent because it was Mary she was running from, and Mary who was in danger. At some point in their living situation, tolerance had transitioned into fondness. Alice stopped running.
I'm going back, she declared, turning around.
No, you're not, Nick told her, pulling himself up short as well. He strode back over to her, groping a bit before finding her precise location in the darkness. I get it. She's our friend. We care. We want her to be okay. And it seems like making a grand stand will facilitate that outcome.
We'll think of something, Alice said stubbornly.
We'll distract her. We'll get in the way. And it's possible we'll get hurt or killed. Accidents happen, even with the safety measures the HCP takes. And Mary will blame herself for not being able to protect us. You want to toss in the fact that we're learning to be heroes? Then remember this. A hero's first priority is the greater good. You feel inadequate and guilty, so you want to ameliorate those feelings by trying to help. That's selfish, though. It puts your need to feel good about yourself over Mary's need to stay safe and win, Nick lectured her.
I still feel like shit,
Alice admitted, something she didn't think she could have said if she'd been able to see Nick's face. Sometimes doing the right thing leaves you feeling like an asshole, Nick told her. Now move.
You're amazing, Chad complimented her. You can't see or sense my thoughts, yet you've still managed to last this long. I'm sincerely impressed.
Mary wheezed in a breath and blinked sweat from her eyes. She appreciated the sentiment, but she didn't feel particularly amazing. Fighting Chad was hell. He was fast, strong, had ridiculous endurance, and worst of all, he didn't seem remotely fazed by not being able to see. She'd been generating what was essentially a bubble of telekinetic power to stop him, but he'd already broken through twice. She'd released a massive burst and driven him back, but he'd landed glancing blows each time. Not to mention the fact that those massive blasts took a lot out of her. She could feel her mental reserve slipping, and her bubble weakening.
Why can't I read your thoughts?
Mary rasped out between ragged breaths. She needed him to talk, to buy even a few extra seconds if she could. Brains work on certain frequencies through electrical impulses. I've done some extensive remodeling of how mine functions to maximize potential. You could think of it as you pick up FM, but I'm broadcasting on AM, Chad explained.
Impossible, Mary said.
No such word. Think of any wonder or miracle in this world, and sooner or later you'll find someone with that power. It's just a matter of perseverance. Speaking of, while I admire your attempt to stall in hopes of a better outcome, don't you think it's time we let this dance come to its inevitable conclusion? Chad asked.
I suppose,
Mary agreed. With one last push of effort, she slammed an area nowhere near the last spot Chad's voice had come from, striking in a wide area rather than focusing on a more central point. Mary had tried several attacks already, but no matter how fast she'd been, Chad was always gone by the time her blast hit the area he'd last been. She let her bubble drop, and put that energy into the strike as well. This was a last-shot gambit, one depending almost entirely on luck. Chad wouldn't be where she'd heard his voice, so the only choice left was to pick a totally different spot and pray for the best. There was a smashing sound as her force struck empty wall, and she knew it was over. Well done, Chad's voice said from behind her. A foot over and you would have hit me. I'd love to fight you again when we're on a more equal ground.
Sure, Mary agreed. After break, though. I need a long rest after this.
Of course, Chad agreed, delicately placing his weapon against her shoulder and giving it a quick pulse. Finally, sweet light, Nick said, as the door slid open and he stumbled into the lit room. Alice followed suit, though more cautiously. Her last light room encounter was a bit too fresh in her mind to leave her at ease.
The loud noises have stopped,
Alice pointed out, as Nick walked to the center of the room and dropped to a sitting position.
I noticed. We'll wait here for 5 minutes to see if Mary joins us, Nick told her.
And if she doesn't?
More wandering in the dark. Staying mobile and hidden are our best bets at that point, Nick said.
You say that like there was a point when that wasn't our only option,
Alice pointed out.
Well, with Mary, we could have pulled off a little magic. Just you and me, though, we're less useful. Have to face facts.
This challenge was designed to favor combat types.
Nick sighed. Nick waited for a reply, but when one didn't come, he turned around to face Alice. He'd expected to see her lost in thought or worry, annoyed at being stuck with him again. Instead, what greeted his eyes was her collapsed form, and a barely noticeable pale glow from her wrist. Shit, Nick swore, scrambling to get on his feet. He reacted quickly, but not quickly enough. A sharp pain emanated from his gut and dropped him right back to the floor. As his vision cleared, he saw a female figure ripple into view. She was a fellow student, of course, one with short, mousy hair and a cocky grin.
I don't know, she said, jumping into the conversation. I find that a power is as useful as the person wielding it.
Well, crap,
Alice said weakly from her spot on the floor. Nick felt that summed it up nicely. 66. Herschel tossed another shirt into his suitcase while Nick and Vince lounged about watching TV. Herschel had decided to do his packing in the boys' lounge to spend a little more time with his dorm mates before the trek home. It was the day after the exam, and the mood was surprisingly upbeat.
"I still can't believe everyone passed," Vince declared yet again.
It was a bit of a surprise that all of the students had been told they would be returning next semester, and from Vince's reaction, he must have been placing himself as a particularly high candidate for elimination.
"I still can't believe we all got beaten by girls," Nick chimed in, folding his arms bitterly.
"What are you, 5? Who cares if we lost to girls? I'm just happy we get to keep going," Vince said, switching the channel to some competitive cooking show.
"It's a point of manly pride," Nick said defensively. "Though I have to admit, yours had a pretty awesome power."
"Enchanting people through song," Vince said, with a shake of his head. "I talked to her afterward. Apparently she can make people feel all sorts of stuff with her singing. Adoration was just the easiest."
"I'm glad it was you and not Roy. Heaven knows how he would have reacted if he actually liked a girl,"
Herschel laughed.
"What about Julia? I thought those two hooked up fairly consistently," Vince asked.
"They do, but that's only because of how unique her power makes her,"
Herschel said, opting to skip over the more lurid details.
"Very diplomatic way of saying she's her own gangbang," Nick said.
"Right. Anyway, Selena, the girl who can sing, told me she snared a bunch of others before and after me. I wouldn't be surprised if she's toward the top in knocking out other players," Vince said.
"So nice of us to tell them we're all coming back, but then hide our scores and which training we'll be going into," Nick said.
"Oh, come on. It's not as if anyone would stay for the results anyway," Herschel pointed out. "Alex, Will, and Jill already left town yesterday."
"Sasha, too," Vince pointed out. "Though she does that with more ease than most, so I'm not sure if that counts."
"I don't blame them," Herschel said with a sigh. "I miss my mom and my town. I can't wait to get home and sleep in my own bed."
"It will be nice to get some real food," Nick agreed. "Hey, Vince, where are you going for the holidays anyway?"
Vince was spared from having to answer by the door to the boys' lounge opening to reveal Mr. Numbers.
"Before anyone leaves, Mr. Transport and I would like to see you all in the common room,"
Mr. Numbers said briskly, turning around and walking right back out.
"That wasn't creepy at all," Nick said, once Mr. Numbers was out of earshot.
"I'm sure they just want to wish us safe travels over the holidays,"
Herschel said optimistically.
"Sure. That, or the order came down to terminate their little project and bury us in shallow graves," Nick replied.
"Let's be realistic. It'd be much easier for Mr. Transport to just ditch us in a volcano or something," Vince said.
"Point conceded," Nick said, as they walked out into the lounge.
Alice and Mary were already there, and of course, the two men wearing suits were standing in the center, just like they had that first day they'd popped in and scared the crap out of everyone.
"So what's this about?"
Herschel whispered to Mary, as the boys ambled over and stood near the girls.
"Let's call it a surprise,"
Mary whispered back, her tone saying quite clearly that that was the end of the subject.
"Thank you all for coming," Mr. Transport announced with a big smile. "Mr. Numbers and I wanted to take a moment to congratulate you on making it an entire semester. As you know all too well by now, this program is grueling physically as well as mentally, so we are very proud that 100% of Melbrook students have lasted into the second semester."
"And surprised," Mr. Numbers tossed in.
"Well, yes, statistically this does count as an unexpected outcome,"
Mr. Transport tried to recover.
"We know, though, that you've all made it this far through determination and hard work. You 5 are doing an excellent job in showing that years of practice with one's abilities don't matter nearly as much as heart."
"We are very happy to have done so," Alice said, all but beaming,
The girl devoured praise and accolades.
"That's good," Mr. Transport said, "because there is one more small task we need to take care of before you're released for winter break." It wasn't the change in scenery that registered first with the five young students. It was the sudden slice of freezing wind ripping across their bodies. The shivers started immediately, as well as a reflexive search for shelter from the scouring wind and the white snow that was dumping down upon them. Everywhere they looked, there was only more snow. Everywhere except up, where a huge peak loomed overhead, lost at the top amidst the clouds.
"I hope you've all still got a little bit of gusto left," Mr. Transport yelled over the wind's howl. "I brought you here for what you can think of as a final exam for Mr. Numbers and me."
He really didn't have to elaborate. Given the surroundings, there was only one logical conclusion. Giving words to it only served the purpose of hammering that unavoidable truth fiercely into their minds, which would be almost cruel given the circumstances. Mr. Transport didn't have any need to elaborate. But he did, anyway.
"You five are going to climb a mountain."
67.
"Bullshit!"
Nick replied, only pure willpower keeping his teeth from chattering.
"Not at all, I assure you," Mr. Numbers confirmed. "Your parents have all been made aware that you'll be detained for a few more days. No one is expecting you."
"But why?"
Alice asked, perplexity and cold slowing her words.
"Because you were all admitted as part of a very special program, one that is being measured in different ways than just your grades. Think of this as an extracurricular activity mandated by your scholarship," Mr. Numbers explained.
"This is crazy! We'll freeze to death," Vince pointed out.
While Vince was admittedly cold, being trapped in a one-man tundra a few months back made it seem more bearable by comparison.
"Now, don't be silly," Mr. Transport said. "We've left you packs filled with supplies and winter wear. You'll find everything you need to reach the top safely."
"That's it? We just climb up?"
Nick asked, probing for potential pitfalls.
"Well, there are two caveats. You have to reach the summit together, and you need to do it in 6 days," Mr. Transport admitted.
"Why 6 days?" Herschel asked.
"Because that's how much food we gave you,"
Mr. Numbers said.
"There's a phone at the top with a pre-programmed number. Call us once you make it, and we'll come pick you up."
"Wait, you're leaving us?"
Alice all but squawked with incredulity.
"Yes,"
Mr. Numbers said.
"You're supers now. Supers find a way," Mr. Transport said. And then both men were gone.
Motherfuckers.
Everyone turned in surprise, because that vulgarity was spat out from the mouth of Mary. 10 miserable minutes of trudging forward had revealed a set of 5 oversized backpacks waiting in the snow. Each was a different color and labeled with a name. Nick's was golden, Alice's pink, Herschel's a dark green, Mary's red, and Vince's blue. It should be noted that none of them gave a shit about that, though. Instead, they tore into the bags savagely and began piling on clothing. Only after everyone was coated, booted, and gloved did they begin to contemplate a strategy.
"Figures the one time I'd have an advantage they'd screw me over," Alice complained. "I mean, come on, it's a damn climbing challenge. It was basically made for people with flight. But no, we all have to make it up there together or it doesn't count."
"Forgive my impudence here, but How the hell would they know? They left, remember? Nick reminded her.
They'll know, Mary assured them. They went to all the trouble of setting this up. They'll make sure we follow the rules.
Speaking of, how did you not see this coming, telepathic girl? Nick asked.
I did. I just hoped they would change their minds,
Mary explained. Nice strategy, that one, Nick scoffed.
It could be worse, Herschel said optimistically. At least I have my emergency flask on me. This way Roy can help if we need him.
Why do you keep an emergency flask of whiskey? Vince asked him.
Pretty much for situations exactly like this one, Herschel replied.
Vince placed his fingers on the bridge of his nose and sighed. It saddens me how much sense that makes in this context. Okay, we know what we have to do, so how are we going to do it?
They gave us climbing gear, food, sterno, flashlights, and water, Alice said, as she rifled through her bag to take inventory.
Aside from which, we have a flyer who isn't allowed to fly, an energy absorber in an environment with nothing he can absorb, enough whiskey for a few appearances of the one person who could do this easily, me and Mary, the marvelous brain girl, Nick said. If we're going to build a strategy around someone's powers, it looks like Mary is our number one candidate.
He has a point, Vince agreed. Could you just lift all of us up to the peak?
No,
Mary said sadly.
Grabbing hold of a person is a delicate procedure. It isn't like throwing objects. I have to worry about pressure and rupturing organs, that sort of thing. I can do it if I have to with one person, maybe two for short bursts, but I'm not confident I could get us far at all. Certainly not safely. Not to mention that I can't really lift myself.
Why not? Herschel asked.
It's a jarring experience, being dangled in midair. It makes my stomach queasy and messes up my concentration, which just makes things less stable in a terrible cycle,
Mary said. So then what's our strategy? Vince asked. In response, Nick rose to his feet, dusted off the snow, and produced a pick, along with a section of rope from his bag.
I'd say our strategy is climb like motherfuckers in hopes of making it home before Christmas.
After a moment of staring at each other, the rest of the group pulled out their instruments and followed suit. To say the act of climbing a mountain was grueling would be like saying Genghis Khan had a mild penchant for empire expansion. It was cold, hellish, and hard. But as the five struggled up the mountain, they found it was doable. For the first time, they were thankful for the months they had spent in gym. Without Coach George's constant conditioning, they would have never had a chance at making viable progress. Proof of this was Herschel, who was forced to use some of his whiskey in the first half hour for fear his muscles would give out and he would go tumbling down. Each of them held this fear, but luckily, it wasn't too steep at the mountain's base, and there were plateaus where rest could be acquired. On one such plateau, they stopped midway through the day for a lunch of water, jerky, and despair. There was nowhere to go but up, though, so they bucked up and began climbing once more. Even Alice found herself hugging the side of the mountain as they climbed higher. With each bit of escalation, the wind grew stronger and colder. Gliding next to the rocks at least gave her some refuge from the wind's chilling bite. Admittedly, she could have flown up to their next logical break stop and waited, but she wasn't confident they would find her once she departed. Besides, even if it wasn't steep, accidents could happen, and she wanted to be close by just in case. The day wore on, and progress grew slower. The mountain was getting steeper, and their muscles were growing colder.
There was a brief huddle, during which they agreed to camp on the next viable rest stop they reached, since it would be madness to try and keep going in the dark. Unfortunately, that spot was farther up than they'd expected, and by the time Roy hauled himself over an icy cliff, nearly everyone else was ready to collapse. Mary followed after him, then Vince. Alice floated over to stand with them, trying not to shiver despite herself. Nick was the last man to scale the side, rolling over and resting for a moment before pulling himself to his feet.
"Well," Vince said, "that sure sucked."
A loud cracking sound interrupted Vince, coming from the edge they had just scaled. There was a moment of realization as Nick looked down to the source of the noise and saw it was coming from directly under his feet. "Shit!" Nick managed to say, as the ice they had mistaken for rock gave way, and he went tumbling back into the open air. 68. There are certain things a person is programmed to expect when falling to their death. Fear, of course. Also a bit of nausea as your stomach rises up. Some of the more metaphysically inclined believers tell us to expect our lives to flash before our eyes. The one thing no one is ever really expecting, though, is what happened to Nick. To be more precise, a pink-clad missile dropped from the heavens and sacked him in the gut. "Ugh!" Nick grunted as he was swung upward onto the same thin shoulder that had just lodged itself in his intestines.
"Not exactly a picnic for me, either," Alice replied, slowing her descent gently.
"Good hit,"
Nick cracked out, trying to right his perceptions in the blitz of snow and wind assaulting his senses.
"Not going to lie, I enjoyed the hell out of it," Alice chuckled. "Now give me your sunglasses."
"Why?"
"Why? Because I can't see shit, and I'm the one driving. Oh, and you aren't getting any lighter, if you were wondering."
Their progress downward had come to a stop, and Alice was now pushing them upward with increasing momentum.
"Excellent point," Nick agreed, whipping off his shades and placing them in her hand.
He would have been more contrary in different circumstances, but being fireman carried in mid-air was enough to make even him agreeable.
"You might want to hold on," Alice cautioned him. "I've never tried to fly with two people before."
"What's wrong with a slow, safe rise?"
"I can't hold you that long. My grip is already slipping,"
Alice admitted. Nick reached down and grabbed her belt firmly without another word.
"Watch the hands,"
Alice snapped, and then they were off. Nick might have described the feeling as exhilarating had his life not been in jeopardy. Instead, the only words that came to mind were hellish, wild, and horrifying. It turned out Alice didn't just float like an abandoned balloon. She cut through the air with shocking speed and hurtled toward her objective. An objective that was difficult to see even with eye protection, primarily due to her cargo severely compromising her maneuverability. Her grip was steadily deteriorating, but she didn't even dream of readjusting. This was all she had. If she couldn't find a place to land, then Nick was going to fall. Then, mercifully, something pierced the white world surrounding them. A bright burst of flame from 30 feet up and to their left. Alice never hesitated, adjusting her course and barreling toward it. She had no hope of sticking a safe landing with both herself and Nick, so she slowed down as much as she could before arriving, then yelled at the top of her lungs.
"Catch!"
"What?" Nick shrieked as she flipped him over her shoulder and left him falling through the air once more.
This drop was shorter, as he felt an invisible force wrap around him and control his descent. Despite the wind and his naked eyes, he saw Alice pull up short a few feet away, plowing into the snow-covered ground with her feet, but managing to stop before she hit the mountain's side. As his own feet finally made contact with the sweet, sweet ground, he turned to face his second savior.
"I thought you couldn't lift people."
"I said it's hard, not impossible,"
Mary corrected.
"Holy crap, are you okay?"
Vince asked, fumbling over to check on his friend. He paused when he arrived, then cocked his head quizzically.
"Huh. I never knew you had brown eyes."
"I am going to cut those two into pieces while they sleep," Nick grumbled, as they huddled around the heat provided by a small can of Sterno.
"Good to see that ethics class really paying off," Vince quipped.
"At least they gave us tents," Herschel said optimistically.
Roy had turned back into Herschel a few minutes after Nick and Alice's spectacular air show. They'd taken the time to pull out the pop tents, anchor them down, and then break into the jerky and gather by the small can of heat.
"I don't think they'll let us die out here,"
Alice said.
"Because they're such awesome guys?" Nick asked.
"No, because my dad has more money and political influence than some countries, and I'm his only child,"
Alice explained.
"You never mentioned that before," Vince said.
"It was never a comforting thought before,"
Alice pointed out.
"If I'd said it at a different time, it would have just sounded bitchy."
"It still sounded a little bitchy," Nick said.
Alice punched him in the arm in response.
"Next time I'm letting you fall."
"Yeesh, okay, I'm sorry. Thought a little levity could lighten the mood."
"Well, it is making me laugh,"
Mary said, giggling softly.
"Bodily harm to Nick is always good humor."
"Huzzah, I've finally found my role in the group," Nick said.
"I thought you had smartass pretty much on lockdown since day one,"
Herschel told him.
"Seconded," Vince agreed.
"That went without saying," Nick added.
"Anyway, enough about me. Let's get back to Alice being a secret millionaire."
"It wasn't really a secret,"
Alice defended.
"I told you about him a little when we did our project. It just isn't something I wanted to bring up. I mean, come on, except for Nick, I don't know anything about your families either. Maybe you're secret millionaires, too."
"My parents are optometrists,"
Mary said.
"They're well off, but hardly millionaires."
"So neither of them had any abilities?" Herschel asked.
"Only a talent for asking people to read off charts. Me being a powered was a total shocker for them."
"How'd they take it?" Vince asked.
"Not bad. Better than when I decided to live in the woods by myself,"
Mary said.
"My mom rolled with it really well," Herschel said. "She took it like she found out she had another son. She never batted an eye about the fact that I couldn't control when I changed."
"How about your dad?" Nick probed.
He left a few years ago. But it wasn't because of me or Roy. Hell, he's the one who taught Roy how to fight. Roy got a lot more unruly after Dad was gone, though. He used to be kind of nice."
Herschel cleared his throat, and Vince took the cue to pull attention away from his friend.
"What about you, Nick? Alice said she knew about your family, but we don't."
"My parents died when I was a baby. I was raised by my mom's sister, Miss Pips. Not much else to tell. You?"
"I never met my biological parents," Vince said. "I was given up for adoption at birth. Things went okay for a little while, then my power showed up and... well, there aren't a lot of foster families out there who can cope with someone as special needs as I was. So when I was six, I gave up and ran away.
Wait, I've heard you talk about your dad before,
Herschel said skeptically. Vince nodded. I call him my dad, because he was, just not biologically. He found me that first week. I doubt I would have made it without his help. He was a vagrant too, so he took me in and showed me the ropes. For some reason, my power never flared out of control around him. I wondered if he had an ability of his own, but he always denied it. He taught me about life, taught me how to fight, even though he only had his right arm, and helped me learn to live on the rails. He died in an explosion when I was 13.
I'm so sorry,
Alice said. It's okay. It was 5 years ago. I've made peace with it, Vince assured her.
But, wait, that was when you were 13. You joined us when you were 18. What did you do in between?
Herschel asked. I kept wandering. Dad taught me how, and it seemed safer than staying in one place or getting too close to people. With him gone, it was too dangerous, Vince explained.
So you've been alone for 5 years?
Alice asked, hoping to be corrected. I wouldn't say alone. I met people, even made friends here and there. But in the way you mean it, yeah, I guess I was, Vince told her. Okay, I think the Rough Childhood Award definitely goes to Vince, Nick said, breaking the dark mood that had slipped over them. Alice rewarded him with another punch for his efforts.
Be sensitive, you dick.
It's fine, Vince said, waving her off. Ancient history. Besides, I think it's safe to say we all went through our tough spots.
I'm inclined to count this as one of them,
Mary noted. Agreed, Vince said. We should get some sleep now that it's dark, though. No sense in wasting any daylight tomorrow. Does anyone know how to turn off the fire?
More trouble than it's worth to try and relight it,
Mary said.
Just absorb it so we can use the heat later.
Can do, Vince said, draining the can of the remaining fire. See you guys in the morning.
69. The thing about climbing mountains is that the first day is pretty much the easiest. From then on, you're dealing with sore muscles, thinning air, and often increasing steepness. The five of them made it to the third day with their free climbing strategy, but a couple of close calls forced them to regroup and examine their options. None of them had any experience on a mountain. However, they did grasp the basic concepts of ropes and hooks, so after some debate and the working out of a few details, the strategy was officially changed. Now, they had Alice fly up ahead of them and secure several hooks, linking the rope and then attaching it to her friends at the lower altitude. It took several tries for her to get the hang of it, but by the time they stopped to rest at the end of day 4, she was able to work reliably and with increasing speed. That was good, because communication was breaking down. After that first night, they'd been too tired to really converse when they camped. It had turned into slinging out the tents, stuffing down some food, and collapsing within. If the day had been particularly hellish, they might eat around a can of Sterno, but those were limited, and it was mutually understood that they were to be used sparingly. Vince was another asset they tapped for warmth, huddling around him on breaks for a quick wave of precious, precious heat. They were cold, they were miserable, and they were tired. They were making progress, though. On the fifth day, Herschel drank the last of his whiskey for Roy's final appearance. Vince developed a nosebleed midway through the day, and Alice's head began to throb in pain. They pressed as far as they could, but they could feel themselves slowing down.
When the light began to fade, they were forced to camp, though they hadn't got